Hey everybody, Paul Douglas Boyer, Madman Machine, show 139 for middle of December, Christmas Cucaracha!
La Cucaracha! La Cucaracha, la Cucaracha, ya no puede caminar, porque le falta, marihuana que fumar. La Cucaracha, la Cucaracha,
that's La Cucaracha by Cumbia Kings. Found that on YouTube. How you doing? First thing I want to tell you is the Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. A lot of good stuff going on out at the Index Funds Advisors website. You know, they have a lot of quick domains now. Just about any quick domain you can imagine. For example, IFA quote. You can get directly to their quote of the week and IFARCS to take their risk capacity survey. So why Christmas Cucaracha? Because you know what they say. If you see one cockroach, you know that there's 100 other cockroaches. And we have seen a big, big cockroach come out of the woodwork in Bernie Madoff. Now, a lot of people pronounce it Madoff, but I prefer to pronounce it Madoff because he made off with $50 billion of other people's money. Now, that's a Ponzi scheme. If you haven't listened to show 134, The Pons, definitely go check that out. About the four-minute mark, I think, into it, I get into talking about what is a Ponzi scheme. I go back into the history of Charles Ponzi and his schemes, and I think Ponzi took people for something like $10 million. Seems rather quaint, doesn't it? Compared to $50 billion for this guy. Now, is he the only one? Is he the only guy out there that is a swindler? Mm-hmm. Well, Cramer says the market is crooked. A couple shows now, he has been saying that hedge funds are corrupting the market for the little guy. The little guy just doesn't have a chance because the hedge fund guy gets on the phone, says, I'm going to start selling and selling and selling. And then he calls up the guy and says, I'm done selling. And then the market, you know, changes direction on a particular stock, I guess he's talking about. And then he asks the question, what's up with 3 o'clock? Why does the market go into this hyperbolic mode at 3 o'clock? There's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal that talks about how leveraged exchange-traded funds are to blame for the market drop, especially after 3 p.m. Or the market volatility, I guess, more correctly to speak, after 3 p.m. But Mad Money is such a different show now that Cramer doesn't come on and has a specific stock to pump and hit the buy button. It's been a long time since he's hit the buy button. And all he has to talk about now is the slumping economy and the crookedness of Wall Street and how he wants to be SEC chairman. Well, he says you cannot rely on the SEC. He says you cannot rely on the SEC to regulate these hedge funds. And I think that's kind of a ruse because there shouldn't be an SEC. Why have this false, why put out there this false sense of security by having some government agency that's completely incapable of regulating industries? And why not leave that to some private organizations? Let private organizations compete to be the best graders of other investment firms. You know how Consumer Reports is such a good source of information about what cars to buy or what toaster to buy and that sort of thing? There could be plenty of Consumer Reports organizations for investment funds. And this business of relying on the government is completely bogus. So I didn't do a show last Friday. Today's the Monday after Friday. Today's the 15th of December. Hope to get it out today to you. The title of my posting on Friday was A Wash. Absolutely a wash in major news items. How can we possibly keep up with the auto bankruptcy? Now, any of these topics you could talk a whole show on. The auto bankruptcy, bank bailouts, of course, the $50 billion Ponzi scheme that I just mentioned, the fact that T-bills are yielding 0% interest, the fact that the Fed is talking about selling its own bonds. Of course, the rising unemployment, layoffs, and this notion of gold backwardation. Gold backwardation, which I can't even come to explain. All the bottom line is people are saying it's COMEX is going to run out of gold and gold prices are going to soar. Yeah, right. I don't know. Kramer saying markets are corrupt. Inflation talk, deflation talk, the corrupt Illinois governor. It's weighing down on a person, all of this tidal wave of bad news. And that's why I didn't do a show on Friday. We went to a Christmas party on Saturday, went to the Balmer Marriott, and we got there early, actually. Walked around a little bit and walked into the Barnes & Noble bookstore there at the Inner Harbor. There was a banner hanging over the front door saying, Michael Phelps appearance, book signing, 12:30, Saturday, December 13th. I looked at my watch, huh, December 13th? Huh, 12:45. Well, he must be here. And sure enough, when we walked in, there was a line of people with their books waiting to get an autograph by Michael Phelps, the 8-time Olympic gold medalist this year. I really don't have any interest in seeing Michael Phelps, so I didn't stand in line. Although I did go upstairs to where the line ended, and there he was, secluded away back deep into the bookstore. A lot of excited fans, mostly female, getting an autographed copy of his book. Now, my wife came up with the idea that we should buy a book and give it to a charity auction. There's a couple of charity auctions we know that are coming up. So we went down and bought the book, couple of books, actually, got back up. And just as we were getting there, they closed the gate for the line. We said, we just bought this book. Please let us in. They said, oh, okay, just one more. They let us in. We walked down to the where the end of the line was, and there was a guy standing there and says, that's it. Nope, no more in the line. We said, what do you mean? We just bought the book. No, nope, wouldn't let us get in the line. So we returned the book and did not get his autograph. There was another line you could stand in, though, and get his picture. So I, with my iPhone, I got in that line, stood up, and took a picture of Michael Phelps. I'll be selling that on eBay. The minimum bid will be $100, I'm sure. But anyway, so the Christmas party was good. A nice diversion from all the bad news. And so I'm back with you, ready to talk about all the bad news. But I did get this call. Have a listen.
Hey, Paul, this is John in Omaha. Just got done listening to your December 5th Mad Money Machine, number 138, I believe. Anyway, here's a few comments for you. I'm in Omaha, and the Creighton Blue Jays are the soccer team that I believe Maryland's going to be playing this weekend. Wish them luck. They are a pretty good soccer team. They've been good in the past, and we'll see how they do this weekend.
Yeah, we didn't get to go see the Creighton Blue Jays, which I called Creighton mistakenly. Play Maryland, but Maryland did win that game, and they went on to the NCAA semifinals, where they defeated St. John's at the second overtime. Fantastic free kick. And then we watched them again yesterday, Sunday, defeat UNC, the Tar Heels, and win the NCAA championship. Great game.
As far as your Firefly, excellent series. I'd be curious to see what you think about it after seeing Serenity first. We had actually watched the series before Serenity came out, and I can't remember what's his name. One of the characters on the show when he... okay, I'm going to ruin it for people, but... Nope.
Just can't let you ruin it for people. We saw Serenity, I guess, when it came out. I think in the theater, actually. And I don't remember movies. I could watch the thing again and I wouldn't remember a thing about it. It would be like watching a brand new movie to me. I guess maybe I don't have any long-term memory. The only thing I remember is the girl was on the ceiling somehow.
Good series. As far as that comment you made or talked about a few shows ago about where do we get the money for the interest payments, did you find out anything more about that? Because that's something that keeps bugging me, that we create money by debt, but yet how do we get that money to actually pay the interest payments on that debt? Where does that money come from? I've got some ideas as far as products that get made cheaper, technology, workforce, all this kind of stuff that the the Fed uses as far as their, you know, reasons for why the economy is growing, that kind of thing. But just curious if you know anything more about where those interest payments, where those dollars for those interest payments actually come from.
Now, you know, I have to say that most of the sources that I read regularly are fairly negative on the Federal Reserve and on fractional reserve banking. And they make a case that interest payments on loans is money that you have to work to get to pay to the bank. And the bank, in the long run, ends up owning everything in the world under such a scheme. I guess look up the word usury and why they outlawed it in ancient times.
Finally, talking about how on your latest episode about disappearing wealth, that the water is still there, the money is still there, that kind of thing. I read a book just a week ago or so called Conquer the Crash, You Can Survive and Prosper in a Deflationary Depression by Robert R. Prechter Jr. I would highly recommend that book. It was actually written back in 2002, and I think he's got a recent update you can download or actually purchase on, not download, but purchase on CD-ROM. I have yet to hear that. I'd like to listen to that, see what any changes he has. But your comment about how dollars are rising because, you know, people are rushing to the dollar, or at least getting rid of assets and going to the dollar as they sell everything. Now they only have cash left over, so the dollars are more plentiful out there. That's precisely what he talks about, Prechter, when he talks about deflation. As if inflation is the increase in money and credit, deflation is the reduction of money and credit, and probably even more so, you know, the credit is the key word there. Yes, the dollars are going up in value, but that's really more or less a correspondence of the fact that there are less and less credit and money out there, meaning that as there's less money to spend, the value of that dollar that's left over is higher, and that's what you're seeing. And I think that that's something that is scaring economists right now, is that deflation. You talk about there isn't water left, the ice cube melts and there's water left over. Yeah, there is, but what's left over is actually at a higher value, that being cash money. Talk about gold, talk about inflation, that kind of thing. That's not the problem right now. The problem is deflation. As we lower the cost of stock and products and that sort of thing, companies have to lay off more. People aren't going to go into debt anymore. We're not going to expand the economy. So we're contracting that money and credit that is out there right now. And that's what you see with that rising dollar, is the deflation that's happening out there. Pretty scary stuff. I highly recommend they Conquer the Crash. Anyway, great episode, number 138. Keep them coming. Talk later. Bye.
Hey, I really want to thank you for turning me on to this book. I did go out and obtain a copy. Got it from the library. Took them a little extra time to get it because when it arrived from transit to my library, they put it on the shelf instead of putting it in the hold section. So I had to go there and say, hey, where's the book? And they went and found it. But it's a quick read. I have skimmed most of it. I think I've got the general gist of the entire book by reading, the first part of a lot of paragraphs and stuff. The first part of the book, it's two books. Let's see if I can outline this for you here a little bit. Book one, Why a Stock Market Crash, Monetary Deflation, and Economic Depression Are Likely to Occur Soon. Remember, this book was written in 2002, so 6 years ago. He was a little early on his predictions. And book two, which is actually in different colored paper within the same binding, just to make sure that you realize it's two books, How to Protect Yourself and Profit from Deflation and Depression. And so that's the practical strategies. If he's right in the first part, then what do you do in the second part? The first part of it, he goes in, of course, he is from the Elliott Wave theory background. And I've got to tell you, I just don't believe in Elliott Wave theory at all. I think that pseudoscience for the unscientific, and it's a way to try to get people to believe that you can look at past charts of stocks and predict future performance of stocks. I just don't buy into it. I think he's been wrong. I think you can take a fractal and map it to a chart of the market and then say, here's where the fractal is going to go into the future. And you'll be right as long as you're willing to bend the fractal to suit your purposes. He also talks about the Kondratiev, I can't pronounce it, Kondratiev cycle, which is this 80-year cycle of inflation and deflation based on business cycles. I just don't believe in it either. It might be a framework to be able to talk about other more realistic things, but I don't believe in charting and stocking, charting and picking stocks or markets according to past charts. But nonetheless, he does define deflation and talks about what would happen in deflation. He talks about the Federal Reserve and what their role is and what they're likely to do in a deflationary environment. So I think it's good from the standpoint of understanding what is deflation, what triggers deflation, what deflations have looked like in the past. It's good from the standpoint of trying to figure out what the Federal Reserve will do in response to deflation, you know, trying to print money. And then he tries to figure out, would that work or not? For example, on page 129, he said, let's return to the idea that the Fed could just print banknotes to stave off bank failures. One can imagine a scenario in which the Fed, beginning soon after the onset of deflation, trades banknotes for portfolios of bad loans, replacing a sea of bad debt with an equal ocean of banknotes, thus smoothly monetizing all defaults in the system without a ripple of protest, reaction, or deflation. There are two problems with this scenario. One is that the Fed is a bank, and it would have no desire to go broke buying up worthless portfolios, debasing its own reserves to nothing. Only a government mandate triggered by crisis could compel such an action, which would come only after deflation had ravaged the system. Even in 1933, when the Fed agreed to monetize some banks' loans, it offered cash in exchange for only the very best loans in the bank's portfolios, not the precarious ones. Second, the smooth reflation scenario is an ivory tower concoction that sounds plausible only by omitting human beings from it. While the Fed could embark on an aggressive plan to liquefy the banking system with cash in response to a developing credit crisis, that action itself ironically could serve to aggravate deflation, not relieve it. In a defensive emotional environment, evidence that the Fed or the government has decided to adopt a deliberate policy of inflating the currency could give bondholders an excuse, justified or not, to panic. And this is the part of the book that I think he's gotten wrong. He says that bondholders would panic and they would sell their bonds. And that would be what? Rising interest rates, I guess. Is that right? Yeah. Bond prices go down, so the interest rate on the bond goes up. That's something Peter Schiff also was wrong about. He thought that bond prices would go down. Neither one of those predictions has come true. People are just running for cash, and bonds is one of the good ways to get to cash. Now, maybe corporate bonds are the junk bonds. Maybe if we substitute that in here, he would be right about that. But in the section then, what to do about it? He asks and answers the questions such as making preparations and taking action. He says the main goal of investing in a crash environment is safety. When deflation looms, almost every investment category is associated with immense risks. Most investors have no idea of these risks and will think you are a fool for taking precautions. And like me, he quotes in here, I can't take a profit. I'll have to pay taxes. Chapter 15, should you invest in bonds? He says, no. Chapter 16, should you invest in real estate? Bottom line, no. Chapter 17, should you invest in collectibles? Bottom line, no. Should you invest in cash? Chapter 18, bottom line, yes. And he even gets to the point of, you know, getting those little green things, those Federal Reserve notes, sticking them in a box somewhere. Chapter 19, how to find a safe bank. Chapter 20, should you speculate in stocks? And he actually recommends some of the short funds. And you remember I've talked about some of the inverse short financials and inverse double short S&P 500, which, by the way, Cramer, that was one thing I mentioned that Cramer said on his show is causing some of the market volatility is these inverse short funds. Well, I do appreciate the call, and thank you so much for turning me on to that book. It was an interesting read. I wish a puff of smoke would go up to tell us when it's all clear that the depression and the deflation is over. Another question I have along that line then. Most of my life, I've been dealing with inflation. I do remember the inflation of the late 70s and early 80s, and how if you wanted to buy something, you better buy it now, you know, and hold it because it's going to be more expensive later. Except for cars, I guess. Used car prices go down. Computers, they always seem to go down in price. And taking out a loan on a house was a good thing because you're paying back with cheaper dollars later. Well, what about taking out a loan during deflation? I guess the opposite has to be true. If you're taking out a loan, you're paying with more expensive dollars later. So that would not be a good thing. You would not want to have a loan. The question then is, should you pay off your mortgage in a deflationary environment? I guess it depends on a lot of things. What else you'd do with the cash? It depends on how long the deflationary environment lasts. Would we go from deflation in the tsunami to inflation? It's a question that intellectually it makes sense. Yes, you'd want to pay it off, but internalizing it just doesn't seem to make sense. I can't grasp the concept of money being more valuable later. Hasn't happened in my lifetime. The Learning Earning segment is where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. These are handy suggestions, mostly from index funds advisors, on what to do about your investments. And this week I want to talk about mutual fund distributions. The end of December is a confusing time for a lot of folks who are invested in mutual funds, because do you buy before the distribution, or do you wait and buy after the distribution? And what is all the record dates and ex-dividend dates and payable dates and stuff like that mean? So I'll have a link in the show notes to a page at IFA that describes mutual fund distributions. Let me talk about it just a second. It says, once you're invested and relaxed, step 12, an understanding of distributions of dividends and capital gains is important for taxable investors. Dividend distributions normally occur quarterly for equity funds, monthly for some fixed income funds, and the final quarter of the year is the highest because it also includes capital gains distributions. Fortunately, index mutual funds have a lower tax impact than actively managed mutual funds, so it is relatively less of a concern. But the tax implications are only important for taxable accounts, and the dates that affect distributions from mutual fund flows are as follows. You have the record date. Let's say, for example, December 9th, 2008. If you owned the fund making a distribution on this date, the ex-dividend date and payable dates amounts will apply to you. All right, well, let's talk about the ex-dividend date and the payable date. If you owned the fund on the record date, the ex-dividend date, for example, a day later, December 10th, this is when a particular fund makes adjustments for its planned distributions to shareholders. The ex-dividend date on the value of your account temporarily declines because the net asset value, the NAV, of each fund is reduced by the planned amount of distribution on the payable date. And the payable date, for example, 5 days later, December 15th, this is the last date when the fund is required to pay the distribution to shareholders, although it's most often actually paid earlier. The distribution amount is reinvested automatically in additional shares of the fund unless you've chosen to receive them in cash. Your account's net value, though, will be unchanged because the net asset value for each fund is temporarily reduced on the ex-dividend date, but then the distributions are reinvested in additional shares at the lower net asset value on the payable date, resulting in an account increase amount equal to the distribution, so it is a wash for the value of your account. Now, for taxable accounts only, your taxable gains are increased by the distribution amounts, whether paid in cash or reinvested. Even if you bought the fund shortly before the taxable distribution, the tax applies to you. This is the process that mutual funds are required to follow to pass along profits to shareholders. Because you are paying taxes on distributions, a positive result is that your cost basis increases by that amount so that your future taxes are lower if you eventually sell the fund. It's IFA's practice to withhold purchasing those funds in taxable accounts whose estimated tax hits exceed their average return over the last 50 years for the time period in question. The estimated tax hits are calculated from the estimated distributions provided by the mutual fund company. For the DFA funds used by IFA, the currently anticipated 2008 stop-buy dates are as follows. November 10th, they stopped buying the 2-year global. November 17th, the 5-year global. November 24th, the 5-year government and 1-year fixed income. And also on the 17th, the global real estate. And December 8th, all remaining DFA equity funds. And they say this is not intended to be a complete explanation of the distribution process or a tax guide, and you should consult your tax advisor for your specific situation. But be aware, you probably don't want to buy a fund right before its ex-dividend date. Learning Earning, brought to you by the good folks at Index Funds Advisors. So I'm not exactly sure when I'm going to get another show out this month. I think I've done, I've done 46 shows in 2008. This is show number 47 for 2008. Rather, it's my 47th show in 2008. If I do one more show this month, that'll be 48, and that turns out to be 4 shows a month throughout the calendar year. So I'm quite pleased with that. This show started exactly 3 years ago, and I would have never imagined that I would have continued doing it for so long when I started. I would have never imagined that it would remain in the top 25, at least, of the iTunes investing podcasts for as long as it has. And I really enjoy doing the show, and I really enjoy the fact that I get so much feedback from you guys and that you are interested in listening to the show. I'm interested in hearing your feedback about the show or about anything else that's on your mind. And the best way to get feedback to me probably now is drop.io/madmoneymachine. That's even better than email in a lot of senses because everybody else can see what it is you are commenting upon. But you can also send me an email, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. Although John in Omaha just sent his voicemail through drop.io/madmoneymachine. That's pretty cool. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll my marble. And for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 139 is John Nash. John Forbes Nash Jr., Ph.D., is the winner of the 1994 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics Sciences. And he was featured in the movie that we did see when it came out in theaters, Beautiful Mind. Did you see that one? Russell Crowe, I think, was in it. Played that guy. Is that right? Well, I bought a copy used of the DVD of A Beautiful Mind. I was going to watch it. And we never did. We never have watched that. So I need to get that out again. Now, especially that John Forbes Nash is the guru on Mad Money Machine Show 139. Now, he recently spoke at the Fordham University's Flom Auditorium on October 14th. And he told the audience, he gave a talk about solutions to the downturn in the national and global economy. He told the audience that such financial crises would be less likely to occur if there was some international monetary standard, such as the gold standard, or competition among worldwide currencies to curb inflation and prevent the rise of mortgage abuses. He expressed some skepticism about a government bailout as a solution. And he said, I get the impression that the government is not ready to do anything that's really beyond a short-term basis. We need a natural stability of value. He said that various interest groups that subscribe to Keynesian or short-term economic theories have sold the public on the notion that inflation is acceptable or that bad money is better than good money. Such a notion, he said, led to the dangerous proliferation of bad mortgage loans, loans made on the gamble that house values would continue to rise and eventually turn a profit. A fixed-rate 30-year mortgage would be reasonable under the gold standard, Nash said. Now there are variable rates and adjustables and convertibles, and it's very complicated for homeowners to figure out what they're getting into. In fact, Nash said, nobody really knows the depth of the financial crisis. Having an internationally oriented money standard would promote better quality currencies and less inflation, he added. Well, you remember that Nash is famous for sharing the Nobel Memorial Prize with two other economists for research in game theory, which is a method of predicting behavior in strategic social situations and is now a tool widely used by economists and biologists. The film Beautiful Mind was nominated for 8 Oscars and won 4. It documents Nash's seminal contributions to game theory and mathematics and his subsequent 25-year struggle with schizophrenia. Well, congratulations, John Nash. You're the guru on Mad Money Machine Show 139. So there is talk about more consolidation in currencies. You know how the euro consolidated a bunch of European currencies. Oh, there's some people talking about an Amero that would consolidate North American currencies. And there are people talking about the G20 when they got together or when they get together, talking about creating a world currency. I'd like to see a world currency, quite frankly. One world currency. Let's see what would we call it. An ounce of gold. An ounce of silver. Those could be our one world currencies. And a one world government to run all those currencies? Not so much. I mentioned how we watched Maryland win the men's NCAA soccer tournament. I also watched the women's college soccer tournament, where UNC Tar Heels won that one. It's pretty amazing that the Tar Heels had the first place women's soccer and second place men's soccer in the same season. That's a pretty good accomplishment. Now, there's one interesting thing about the women's soccer match. One of the girls on there, I don't remember her name, she does a flip throw-in. And first of all, if you don't know what a throw-in in soccer is, then you've never watched soccer. When you're on the sidelines, you need to get the ball back in, you put it over your head and you throw it as far as you can using two hands to flip it in to play. Well, some people have gone to the extreme of doing a flip throw-in to get added leverage on the ball. And what they do is they stand as far from the line as they can get, usually to the stands. They start running, and what this girl does, she holds the ball over her head and then does a complete flip. The ball hits the ground, she's still holding on to it, and then she flips all the way over, still holding on to the ball, and releases it at the top to get maximum leverage on throwing the ball as far as possible. And it seemed to work sometimes. And I've got a link to a video of her doing this, which I recommend that you watch. And then I've got two more links of guys doing this with rather unsatisfactory results for the opposition, if you know what I mean. And if you've got to watch the links, they're hilarious on these flip throw-ins. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. This one is as simple as possible. It is nightstand for the iPhone. It's a clock that looks like the clock on your nightstand. You can make it blue, green, or red. And as long as your iPhone is plugged in, it will display the clock. I find it handy. That's the tool in the crib this week. iPhone's nightstand. And like other tools I've given you so far, it's free. Yeah.
what I want.
So I mentioned the links to get feedback to me. One other thing I'd like for you to do, if you would, is subscribe to IFA's Quote of the Week. I've been doing the voiceover for a few of these now. I think they're going to start releasing some more of them. There is one that you can get through the iTunes subscription link that I've done so far. You can get both an audio-only version of it and a video version of their Quote of the Week. Quote of the Week 43 is particularly interesting. I hope that you'll get that soon and listen to it, but make sure you're subscribed to it. So go in the show notes of this show, show 139, and I'll have the link right there. Subscribe to IFA's Quote of the Week podcast, or go out to ifaquote.com, and they'll have a link in there of how you can subscribe to that podcast. Get it loaded up in your iTunes, and every time it comes out, listen to it right away. It's always very informative. I want to thank you for joining me this week. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes Christmas cucaracha to make a mad money machine. I'll see you in a few days, hopefully before the new year. I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas, and I'm going to leave you with a song that I found on the Podsafe Music Network. This one's from an Irish lad named Iwan Harrington, and it's O Holy Night. Merry Christmas.
O holy night, the stars are brightly shining. This is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Serenely beaming with glowing hearts, by his cradle we stand. And so led by light of the stars sweetly gleaming, here come the wise men from Orient land. The King of Kings lay thus in lowly manger.